Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
So I'm concerned whether I would actually find the right button today. My goodness.
To get ourselves a treat. Delicious. Yeah, it's pretty remarkable watching the well-oiled machine up close and personal.
Gary, come back. It's time to talk movies. Alan Adams joining us here in studio. Happy Monday, Al.
And to you as well, sir.
A beautiful day out there.
Oh, isn't it gorgeous? Yeah, just what you want from a beautiful January day here in Maine.
Yeah, you said you were shoveling water.
Shoveling water. Because we had the snow and then the ridiculously cold temperatures. So there's this nice little ice sort of like barrier at the very bottom of my driveway, just tall enough to make sure that all the wet that's happening right now just accumulates there at the bottom.
Yeah, it's nice.
And so I was out there and I was just pushing water with a snow shovel. And you're sitting there and it's like, nothing about this makes sense.
Now, was it also pouring as you did this?
I did manage to wait until it was, I mean, it wasn't done raining, but it certainly wasn't as much of a downpour as we saw earlier today.
Well, good. Well, before we talk movies, how did last night go?
It was good. It was well-received.
You guys did Ready, Set, Go again.
Ready, Set, Go with Penobscot Theater. It's the ongoing improv show there where the second Sunday of every run of a PTC show, a group of improvisers takes over the set and improvises a new play there on the spot. It was a lot of fun. It was myself, Jen Shepard, and Lawrence Fingerhut. Our friend Dennis Price was there. Tara McDonough of You Should Smile More, Yes and Co., et cetera, a very talented Southern Maine improviser. And a guy named Tim Stiffen, an acquaintance of Jen and Lawrence's from their IA days. And it was super fun. It was pretty well attended, all things considered. I think we benefited from the fact that a lot of people didn't have to work today,
right?
Which was nice. We got out there and did our thing. It was a hoot.
That's fantastic. All right, three movies that you're going to talk about this week: Scream, Sex Appeal, and The Tragedy of the Scottish Play.
Yeah, The Tragedy of that guy.
No, this is a studio. I think we can.
Yeah, no, you're allowed. You're allowed, I think.
All right. Where should we begin?
The one I want to spend the most time on is The Tragedy of Macbeth. So we'll burn through the other two pretty quickly. Sex Appeal, it's a Hulu original. Very charming. It's a teen sex comedy, one of the things that's really interesting and that I've had the pleasure of sort of noticing during my time working as a film critic. I feel like the teen sex comedy is one of those sort of subgenres that has very much evolved over the years. Mm. Like, in the 80s, you had stuff like Porky's, and then in the 90s, movies like American Pie. And as we've gone into the 21st century, with attitudes about sexuality, especially teen sexuality in particular, how that relates to women have evolved in a very positive direction.
Absolutely.
I think. And so, even something like American Pie, which I loved when it first came out, like in retrospect, it's like, yeah, there's some problems here, but this movie, it basically stars a young woman named Mika Abdallah. She plays a high school senior named Avery, very type A overachiever type, who her primary goal is she wants to become a repeat champion at STEMCon, which is a science, technology, engineering, mathematics conference for high school students from all over the country. She's all this stuff has come sort of at the expense of a personal life, despite the best efforts of her moms, played by Fortune Femster and Margaret Cho.
Oh wow!
Yes, as well as the mom's girlfriend, Mama Kim, played by Rebecca Henderson. So it's just nice. a lovely little assemblage there. She doesn't have a ton of friends. Her best friend, so to speak, is this guy Logan, played by Jacob Short, who she's known since she was a kid. They spent a lot of time. He was the subject of her many experiments when they were growing up, until a clumsy romantic effort on his part caused them to sort of drift apart when they were freshmen in high school. But they're still friends. Anyway, so Avery has this long-distance boyfriend, this guy that she actually met at StemCon and will be seeing at StemCon again. He's giving the indication that he would like to take things to the next level. She is very nervous about that. She's not someone who is particularly good at dealing with the idea of not being great at something. And so, well, she decides that she's going to take it upon herself to figure out how to get better at that stuff before she sees her boyfriend. the aforementioned friend slash experimental partner comes into it, and that progresses much in the way that you would expect. It's a movie that's not going to surprise you very much, although I will say there are some aesthetic flourishes that are pretty fun, particularly when they get to the actual moments of sexuality. There are a couple of, frankly, Esther Williams-inspired, like, synchronized swimming numbers that happen just, you know, at the moments that you could probably guess at what those moments happen. There are, you know, I'm not gonna go into too much detail, but those are pretty fun. The performances are fun. It's not a great movie. Like, it's pretty forgettable. But yeah, like, as far as these teen sex comedies go, you could do worse.
All right, that's Sex Appeal. What about Scream?
You know, I liked it more than I thought I was going to. This is the fifth installment in the Scream series, but it's the first one we've seen in like 10, I want to say 10 years. I think Scream 4 came out in like 2011. It's not a reboot. It is very much a sort of revisiting of the original in a lot of ways. But enough time has passed that we're talking a lot of these characters are the kids of, or the, you know, the nephews, or they're related to the original figures in the original Scream movie.
The Next Generation.
Kind of. Yeah. And it stays in that sort of Scream wheelhouse of self-reflection as far as the horror genre is concerned. Because horror movies, like, I think more than any genre of movies really are sort of built upon looking at their own history. And this movie, the original Scream took that to an extreme, and this new one continues in that note, a meta commentary on a meta commentary at this point. The basic gist is it's 25 years after the events of the original movie, and the Ghostface killer is back killing people. You've got the same sort of like little group of friends, and there's an older sister who returns to Woodsboro because her sister is the one who has been, is the first one who has been attacked. She returns, and then, you know, things start to spiral, and we start to wonder, why is it so important that this particular person be brought back to town? And then, you know, Dewey, David Arquette's character, turns back up. We see Courtney Cox and Nev Campbell, they all return, playing their previous roles. And it just sort of plays out in that same sort of, who's the killer, following the rules of horror movies. But now we've introduced, other subgenres. Like, there's some discussion about elevated horror, and we get a lot of discussion about fan service and fan fiction and things like that. And so it really does a good job of taking that original sort of ethos of the Scream, of that original Scream movie, and sort of just transporting that to the current climate by introducing those sorts of different sorts of ideas with regards to what it even means to care about a film franchise. Some rather pointed Last Jedi references get dropped. It's pretty smart. It gets, you know, there's some fairly gory surprises that pop up here and there, but also some really big laughs, including, like, I mean, honestly, I laughed, the hardest I laughed was at a throwaway line that I'm not going to spoil, but there were just a lot of those little moments, these sort of Easter eggy sort of tips of the cap, both to previous installments in this franchise and also other sorts of horror films and other films that have developed large fandoms. I don't want to say too much about the plot because you don't want to spoil stuff like this, particularly when, hey, although, look, man, like, this is the one that finally unseated Spider-Man at the box office. Right. So, it did almost $50 million at the box office over the long weekend here. And that's pretty impressive, all things considered. But it's a lot of fun. If you like horror movies, you're going to enjoy yourself. And if you like this sort of self-aware type of storytelling, it really works.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to it. They've all been pretty good.
Yeah. Yep.
Finally, Joel Cohen going off on his own and taking on the Bard.
It's weird, right? It's weird that it's a Cohen brother.
Yeah.
It's Joel Cohen. He adapted the William Shakespeare play Macbeth to the screen for this film. It stars Denzel Washington as the man himself, and Frances McDormand, who is both a tremendously talented actress and B the wife of Joel Cohen. So I wasn't sure what, like, I knew I was, I mean, it's Joel Cohen, it's Denzel, it's Frances McDormand. Like, I'm gonna like this movie.
And it's Shakespeare.
You know, like it's one of those things where, like, I knew going in it was something I was going to enjoy. I don't think I was ready for just how interesting a movie experience this was. It's shot in black and white. They hit the ground running. Like, there's fog, and it all feels, there's this strange, like, I kept coming back to, you know, and it's, I'm sure, like, a million people have made this comparison, but, like, I kept coming back to Bergman. Like, it's very much feels like an Ingmar Bergman film.
Nice.
Lots of fog. The outdoor scenes are very stylized to the point where it's like, okay, this is clearly on a soundstage and I don't care. Like, it's very, and it just lends that sort of closed in sort of insularity that I think is really important to a good telling of this story. A story that I am not going to synopsize for you people. Like, you can go ahead and read a book or see one of the multitude of film adaptations. If you don't know from Macbeth at this point, I don't know what I can do for you.
Right.
You know, but yeah, it's, I mean, the cast is absolutely stacked. Like, you know, I mentioned Denzel and Frances McDormand, but some wonderfully talented actors. Corey Hawkins plays Macduff.
Brendan Gleeson
as King Duncan, which is great. Harry Melling, who will always be Cousin Dudley from the Harry Potter movies. he plays Malcolm, which is an inspired bit of casting.
Stephen Root?
Oh, man. Stephen Root is the porter at the gate.
Oh,
and I love that scene anyway. Yeah. And it's just like, as soon as it started, I'm like, I looked over at Sharon and I'm like, that's Stephen Root. Oh. And she's like, is it? I'm like, oh, yeah, that's definitely Stephen Root. You could hear it in his voice. And then he got close to the, you know, because that's one of the stylistic flourishes that I would really love to talk about with this movie, because it's so much of it is shot it at a distance, like so many wide shots where the figures of action are sort of very much isolated, very small at the center of the screen, and everything is surrounded by this cavernous space, unless it's an extreme close up. Like there are almost no like medium shots in this film. Like everything is either taking place in this sort of yawning chasm, you know, with action taking place in a very, very small part of the screen, or just right up close on faces and interactions and things like that. And the sort of juxtaposition between those two sort of looks is really striking. As I said to Sheridan while we were watching, I'm like, hey, you know, it turns out this Joel Cohen guy knows how to make a movie. but again, beautifully shot. It's just incredible storytelling, some wonderful visual effects, very sparingly used, but in a very effective way.
And one actress playing all the witches.
Oh man, yeah, that was you meet the witch. She's this older and I'm guessing some sort of contortionist or whatnot. Mm. So there's a lot of weird, like, extreme body movement that's happening. But there are just these wonderfully striking moments where it's this person by themselves, and then Cohen finds ways to create like reflections and all these sorts of different all this different methodology. So it's like you're never sure: is it one? Is it three? Is it somewhere in between? Mm. And we're sort of in the fog of war with Macbeth, as he's not really sure what's going on either. And so it's really this wonderful representation of sort of the inner workings of what's going on with him as he goes. Another just beautiful choice, I thought. You know, some traditionalists may vary. Cohen didn't make anyone try to do an accent. He just let everybody talk the way they talk.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's this and like, and you wonder about it. And you're like, is this gonna work? Turns out when you got Denzel and you got Frances McDormand,
right.
it works. The two of them together are just, I mean, it is just magnificent. It's like a masterclass, you know. Like
these
are two of the most talented performers we've got. And Denzel looks old, like in a good way. Like, yep. I mean, like the beard is white, like his hair is all salt and pepper, and it's just like he shows his age in a way that we don't necessarily see a lot from him. And Frances McDormand is the same. Like, she's someone who clearly isn't really all that concerned with clinging to the vestiges of youth, like so many of her peers are, and that creates this very naturalistic feel to them. Like, they, God forbid we have an age appropriate couple on screen.
Right.
You know what I
Imagine
mean?
Imagine that.
You know, and it's just like, and they fit together so well. And there's this sort of regality to Denzel that permeates the whole thing. But you also get like little bits and pieces of like other, like you get some of that, you know, some of that Denzel swagger. Like, there are moments where you just see it in his body movements, and you're just like, oh man, this is not the sort of Macbeth that you've seen before. But it's a wonderful portrayal, and one that I think is really striking with regard to sort of getting to the core of that character. And again, like I said, Frances McDormand is brilliant. She is an absolute treasure. Frankly, I'm really jazzed that I got a chance to see her play Lady Macbeth, because it's just a remarkable performance. But again, like you said, like, I mean, the cast is wonderful. Like, everybody is great. And so you have these wonderful performances coming together with this very idiosyncratic but very specific visual style. And it just comes together in a way that is just compelling as hell to watch. And, you know, for those who are concerned about such things, tight hour 45.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
But really, like, very, very true to the text in
now,
a way.
It, just in theaters, or is it streaming too?
Apple TV Plus, my friend.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Giddy up. All right. That's on my list for the week.
Oh yeah. You should check it out, man. And it's one of those movies where it's like, you know, there are some films that are obviously going to translate better to the big screen or whatever, but there's an intimacy to this one that really, I think, like, I'm not saying you shouldn't see it on the big screen, but it's not, you're not going to lose anything watching it at home.
Can't wait. Awesome. Thank you, Alan.
Thanks, man.
Alan Adams talking movies with us here on Pass the Popcorn on Down.